want to bring you up to date with some of the software that we're working on. We're going to focus primarily on parallelization and threading. And most of this will be focused at the core level as opposed to at the big cluster level. One of the things that we did is we took advantage of virtualization and began to build a system. So we're just released, and this, it will ship out through some of the OEMs, software that virtualizes, because of the virtual support in the CPU, you've virtualized the NIC driver. Therefore, you can begin putting manageability-type functions in that virtual machine, on that virtual machine, while you're running your other applications on the other virtual machine. So you have a way now of protecting the NIC driver and looking at all the data that's coming into your machine to look for viruses or management or whatever that. So another functional splitting, run a virtual machine. Each virtual machine runs on its own core, and therefore you can bring more value to that. Seeing a lot in the way of games, really driving quickly to immersion type of virtualization where you're immersed in the scene. You're also seeing that in Google Earth, Google Maps. You're beginning to fly around, go right down, and a lot of innovative things happening here that you're bringing the power that you can do. Give you a little update where we're at as we work with ISVs and get software threaded. Last year when we talked to you, we were roughly 60% level of the ISVs that we deal with were beginning to thread their applications. Doesn't say they're all their applications, but they now are trained, they've got major applications in progress. Some of those are shipping, some of them are starting to. That number's come up, and you see it's come up significantly in some countries, APAC running ahead of others. But now it's well over 80, 85% of the ISVs are beginning to move their apps, so that's good. Here is a list of some of those ISVs. You'll see on this list most major ISVs that you're building applications around now are in this threading exercise. Now, what we're doing with most of these is we have AEs that we've trained on our own processes and tools that we're implanting in these companies, training them, but also helping them as they begin to thread those applications or rework those applications. So that's progress that we've made. In looking at scaling your performance, there's a number of things that you want to look at. And I want to just quickly highlight those, what they are. A lot of performance can be gotten out of microarchitecture tuning. Now, this is basically taking advantage of the microarchitecture, knowing information about cache size, all of those kind of things, the number of buffers to the bus and write back buffers and all those things, and then being able to tune around those or utilizing them most effectively. This level of optimization, you know, is typically the last thing you do to get the last 30% performance out of that application. This is also the part that we do well in tuning our compiler to automatically do this for you. And that's the advantage of using some of the tools that Intel puts out. So whether it's our compiler or our hand-tuned libraries, such as our math library or our video codecs, much of the effort we put in there is along these lines. The other area is the application itself tuning. Do I have the right algorithms? Do those algorithms effectively utilize the architecture? Do they effectively share data? How about bus bandwidth? Am I keeping the processor fed? So typically what you do here is you use a tool like VTune. You go through and analyze. You look at the critical path through the application, where it's spending most of its time, and then you want to shorten that path. Okay? The shorter that path, the faster you get through that code, and the faster the application runs. So that's a lot of what you're doing here. In this case, we have provided a number of algorithms, particularly if you're into our math library algorithms, a lot of uses of those in the talk that Steve gave. Most of those major players are using libraries like MKL, a lot of matrix solvers in that. An example of an interesting one that we've been working with is Johns Hopkins University. They're trying to do brain modeling to help a surgeon as they do surgery on a brain, they want to be able to model the brain and get dynamic feedback of that. So getting an application like that fast enough that they can use it real time is what it's all about. We're working with them there on their equation solvers and trying to get highly tuned equation solvers that will speed that up. And an application like that, you can typically get 3x, 5x, maybe even 10x performance gain by choosing the right type of algorithm and then adapting your application to that algorithm. Another type of tuning is system tuning. And this is an area that's very important to look at, not only the network, but the I/O subsystem. Can I get enough information in and out of that system to feed those CPUs? So this is not between the memory and the main processor, but this is basically I/O in and out. A lot of work in the database area goes into this. You may be surprised to see that some of these benchmarks that we run, TPC at the very top, the high-end machines, we're running as many as 5,000 to 6,000 disk drives on those to get rid of the latency of the spinning disk and to get it CPU bound so you can really tune it. So these are the type of things you're worrying about there, tuning that I/O subsystem and really getting the full performance out of it. Today I want to focus primarily on giving you an update of where we're at on our support for parallelization and some of the techniques that we're looking at in working and actually delivering here. So if you think about it, this is where you take the application and you split it up so that it can take advantage of those multiple cores. So you should think of the core as the CPU's set of elements, registers, and that you run the applications on, ALU, and you should think of the thread as the part of the code that's running on a given core. Okay? So that terminology is a little bit loose, but that's conceptually what you have. So what we want to do is speed up that application when it's running on those multiple cores. Now, there's a couple things that you need to look at here. First of all, we introduced hyper-threading. And hyper-threading basically was the first concept where you're actually duplicating a set of registers, but you're not duplicating the full chip. And you probably ask, well, why do we do that? That's basically an easy way. The extra cost to do that, you know, is somewhere 5 to 10% in transistors, and it's fairly low in power. So that gave us, keep the power down, get performance, and we're seeing now typically where apps are using that somewhere in the range of 30% performance gain. It's the sharing of the cache, is sharing of the some of the registers, the ALUs, that limits that. Now as we go to multiple core on a die, you've got the complete chip reduplicated as opposed to just the register sets. In this case, you should expect the parallelism to be basically somewhere, theoretically, you know, 1x for each additional core. So two cores should be 2x. Practically, you don't get that kind of performance because you still have memory and you've got the bandwidth of the bus coming to memory. When you think about threading, there's two ways of doing it. You can think of dividing up a task into subtasks and farming those out, or basically adding new functionality to the application. So, you know, if you're like me at home, your wife says, you go do the dishes and I'll mop the floors. That's two tasks. Okay, they're independent. I can do mine when I get done watching TV. She can do hers before she goes to bed. One's not dependent on the other. So that's the way you want to think about it. Now, if it's creating new capability, you're trying to bring innovation, then, you know, it's whose tasks are different. It's you go build a new addition to the house while I do the normal work. And you're bringing new capability and functionality there. So that's the way. When you think about threading, though, really the problem is somewhat different. And the best way to look at it is from a data viewpoint. I have this amount of data. I have to do work on that data. How do I divide my tasks to get that work done? We're going to show you some demos in a little bit. An example would be a video codec. Suppose I'm writing a video codec. I can break it up into blocks for each frame, and I can have a thread work on each block. Or another way of dividing the data up is I do frame one, you do frame two. I do frame three, you do frame four. You split it that way. So those are ways. But when you think about it, you really want to think about taking the data, splitting it up. Now, the problem when you do that is you can have data dependencies on the boundary. When I break it up into block, how about that little line that comes down the boundary? Who writes that? Do you write it or do I write it? And then there could be different results on that line. So how do you handle the data dependency areas is where you have to spend a lot of time and thought. So that's one technique for threading. That's usually the way that you want to think about it if you're writing new code. Okay. The other is functional. And so this is, like I mentioned, where we split up the task into two independent things. And a lot of existing applications that you're doing, this approach to threading is where you end up because you don't want to rewrite the full application. So let me look a little bit at a couple examples. If I'm writing to the native threads of the operating system or even a POSIX package of thread user level, there's a lot of replication I have to do. I have to start off by declaring the threads. I have to then create the threads. I have to then begin managing those threads and what they're going to do. So a lot of repetitious work, and the programmer in his own head has to keep track of this data does have data, or these two tasks have data dependencies, and I've got to lock that data so that one guy doesn't change a value until it's correct. And, you know, if you're both trying to write at the same time, that's called a race condition. Now, there's one thing in this program I don't like. They hard-coded the number of threads in there. You see up at the top, constant integer number of threads equals 4. We really encourage the ISVs, don't do that. You basically want to use CPU ID, ask how many threads are available in the system, and then use that many dynamically. That way, as you go to the next generation processor that we bring out in 6 months or 8 months, you automatically can take advantage of those threads as opposed to being locked in. So that's traditional. A lot of handwork, a lot of keeping in your own head the dependencies and worrying about it. Why can't the compiler do this for you? It's meant to do the busy work. It's meant to check on those data dependencies. So the holy grail of compilers for the last 25 years, and Dave Cook is probably in the audience, he's the father of this, was to produce automatic parallelization in the compilers. So what you want to think about here is the compiler take that data, it figure out how to split it up, and then it looks for data dependencies, and it really then does all the work for you. That's done. There are compilers out there, including our own, that has auto-parallelization. You know, 25 years of research has improved it. You know, you can get scalability that's reasonable. Some applications that have been rewritten to help that even do better. And we continue to invest in that area. Now, a lot of what we've done there, the infrastructure that we've built, can be helped if the programmer gives some hints to the compiler. And that's what OpenMP is all about. It's an industry standard. It's in our compilers. It's in SGI's compilers. It's in Sun's compilers. It's in IBM's compilers. Microsoft's adding it to their compilers. It's in GCC. So it's an open standard that everybody's working together. And what are those hints? So those hints are those pragmas. Now, what it's telling the compiler is, here's a section of code that you can parallelize. And now what the compiler does is automatically figures out how to do a transformation on those loops, change the order around. So in this case, you see, changes the order around so that you're operating on a column of that vector at a time, and it creates a thread for that column. So that's what OpenMP is all about. Let the compiler do as much of the busy work as possible, but the programmer give it some hints. This works very well for loopy code that has a lot of loops. and that the data dependencies, you can analyze it and figure it out. Okay, and if you know you're going to use this, you can write code better, even to make it better. Now, our compilers today hold a record on SGI. I think it's 128-way SGI now. And we took spec, and there's a version the industry has of spec for OpenMP, where it has these pragmas in it, and how much parallelization are you getting out of it. So most of the scientific code, a lot of the multimedia code, most of our libraries we produce utilize this and try to get as much parallelism out of it as possible. What I want to talk about next is where we're at on our tools and what's available. I talked to you last February, and we had a number of things then in a beta program, and now they've moved forward and they're actually moving into product. So the first new thing are some basic building blocks. Now this approach I'll go into some detail about, but at a high level, these are templates, C++ templates, that allow, and some existing algorithms that we've parallelized, that allow you to write your code using our templates, and that does a lot of the busy work for you. The other is the thread checker, thread profiler. These now are both up to version 3.0. Gotten a lot of feedback from you on your applications, and we've made improvements. Now, one thing is I pushed up my own compiler team, why don't you parallelize your compiler? Why don't you try to use your tools to parallelize the compiler? Bad idea. Why would I ever want to do that? No, go do it. So they did. Guess what? It started off with somewhere in the range of 300,000 violations. Now, violation is a data violation. It's where you're trying to parallelize and you have those dependencies that you haven't fixed. Could be through shared variables. It could be through global variables. So they went through and began working on those, and now we have used this tool to get rid of all those violations, and we've got the basic part of the compiler now parallelized so that it will take large programs, break out functions, do those all in parallel, and begin getting some speed-ups by taking advantage of multiple cores at once to do that. So we're trying to eat our own dog food here. We've got our AEs using them, feeding back improvements as they work with you. We've got our own teams trying to use them on threading some of our own applications, seeing some good results. Those are now both on Linux and Windows, and some of these tools we're also moving to Apple. We'll talk about. The third place, we've done a lot of work on libraries. We can give you these heavy math libraries that are highly tuned, not only for the microarchitecture, but threaded. Allows you to get that your application to market sooner. We now are extending that to include XML libraries. These libraries are in progress. We're beginning beta. We're at this stage. We would love your feedback. Okay, you've got a chance to influence us. We're trying to follow industry standards, JAXPY, other standard open source libraries, so that you can just have a drop-in replacement for those interfaces. We'll come back at the end and talk about those. So if you think about the entire tool set, here's the way we'd like to think of the process to tune your application. First thing, go through and run VTune and the thread profiler and analyze your program and its match to the architecture. Then you go through and enter those tools, and the version number tells you our latest shipping version, so you, if you're using them, you know whether you're on the latest version or not. Then you go through and introduce your threads. Now, when you introduce your threads, you probably aren't going to keep all those data dependencies in your head, so you're going to expect some programming errors. The next step then comes along and helps you check those, the confidence, correctness, the thread checker. It helps you to see if you do have those data dependencies that you need to put locks around, and or if you have race conditions and you fix those. And then you come back after you've reduced all of those problems and you start working on optimizing and tuning, much like I talked about there, the system level, the architecture level, and the microarchitecture level. Some of the So with that, that's the compilers and the tools that are available now. What I'd like to do is go into a little bit more depth on the thread building blocks. These are new. We've gotten some very good feedback on these, and we're looking at innovative ways to get more people using them, working together. Now, the concept here comes from a concept in C++. C++ handles what's called templates, and there are already some classes out there that take advantage and give you templates to build your application. So things like hashing, sorting, those kind of things are standard application templates that you can utilize. And those have been around as long as C++, and there are classes that go along with C++, and they've been standardized through the committees. So what we said is, why don't we take the same concept, build templates, but go in and parallelize a lot of algorithms and provide lower-level capability to reduce your busy work. Why should a programmer have to initialize threads? Why should a programmer have to do a lot of the management functions? Can we raise up to a higher-level capability, much like OpenMP does, for hints to the compiler, things like parallel for, reduce, or scan, these kind of operations that you want to do in parallel. So we've done that. There are primitives also for locks and that. And then we took a number of the standard algorithms and we parallelized them so that we even provide that level. So let me give you an example here around the sort. And this is a quick sort. Now, if you think about it, the concept I said, take your data and focus on parallelizing and getting multiple tasks to work on that data. So the first thread in this goes through, picks a random spot, and does a quick sort on that random spot. Now, if you're not a programmer, it's pretty simple. I go through, I got a random spot, it was pretty close to the middle, that's good enough, and that number turns out to be 37, I believe, yes. Now, once you have that, that first thread then starts walking the list serially. Is a number bigger than 37 or less than 37? If it's less than 37, it leaves it in on the bucket it's in, your left side. If it's bigger than 37, it just throws it in the other bucket. So you've got an initial bucket of those two. Now, the interesting thing is the algorithm divides the work and conquers. Now it has a second list it can sort, the yellow. So it spawns off another thread automatically. And it says, repeat the same process on that thread, or on that data. So it goes through, finds a random spot, and walks the list. If it's less than that number, keeps it on your left. If it's bigger, it throws it on the other side. And it just repeats this process down through, dividing the data and creating more threats. Now, because we wrote the templates, we've put the busy work in to find out how many threads, how many cores are available, and making it utilize all those cores that are available. So you don't have to do that. It does it for you. It keeps track of that. The other thing is we've built a scheduler in, and basically you have a pool of work to get done, and you have cores that are available. So what the scheduler does is goes and grabs from the pool of cores, a core, assigns it to a thread, do some work. And you're going to see that concept used quite frequently in threading. And that's all taken care of for you. So you're able to utilize this algorithm on your sort with different data, and it will effectively go through using these templates, will do that for you. So it processes on through until it's actually done. So the whole concept of building blocks is built around this kind of concept. Provide templates for algorithms as well as some of the management type functions and allows you to go through fairly quickly. We've seen in a lot of the applications that we've actually written, you know, a reduction about a fourth as much code by the programmer needs to be written as if they do everything by hand by themselves. Also, the other advantage is the correctness when it's done somebody else is worried about that for you, as opposed to you having to go through. So we've talked a lot about threading and how to go about it. One other library I did want to talk about is the XML very quickly. So much like the math libraries, we've threaded these libraries, and we're in the process of getting them to final product. Now, in order to help you take advantage of these, we've tried to maintain as many of this industry standard library interfaces for XML that are out there. So Java AXP is a good example of an interface to Java for XML and allow you to process it. Some of the results we're seeing, these will be available over the course of the next 6 months or to a year. They're in design now, as well as some of the early ones are in beta. Some of the results we're seeing on these benchmarks show you a 3x to 5x performance gain. Now, one of the things that we're after here is really beginning to establish these so we can put hardware under them. Most of you are aware we've bought a couple XML companies that are working in this space. This work is part of the Saravega team that came on board. Also have a hardware team, and we're beginning to really analyze how to speed up with hardware parsing. There's a lot of data handling now is through XML. So in summary, I think you see that Intel is working with the industry. We've made good progress as we move forward at getting more applications threaded. We're providing a very rich ecosystem of tools, libraries around this, and we'll continue to do that. Parallel, I wanted to give you a quick update. We're continuing to work with the universities. We've got 50, 60 of them now we're working with worldwide to begin to impact their curriculum to teach more about threading and take advantage of multi-core architectures in this shift in the industry and trending. In parallel, we have our own training program through what we call Software College. We put all our AEs through it, and now we're in the process of going out and making that material available to universities as well as software parks or within companies if you want training in-house. I think you can see that ISVs and end users are now significantly engaged. A lot of new innovation is happening around this. We're very excited about the trend we're seeing in the industry and the capability that Intel is doing to continue Moore's Law and going to more cores per die, and the fact that the ISVs are responding, bringing innovation to those, as well as scaling their applications. Thank you, guys.
Richard Wirt.